These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Mike, last night, Kirk, was weird asking him about the timeouts. You guys had one left at the end of the first half, and he said that that was something he typically doesn't – he doesn't ever mess with that. He said that's not coaching.
That's my
fault.
Does
he have the ability –
It was a miscommunication. He has the ability, but that was miscommunication. I won't get into it, but there was a miscommunication, and we're trying to get on the ball. A receiver lined up wrong and took too much time.
Oh, my God. What are we calling this now? Timeout gate?
I love the gate.
Timeout gate?
A Watergate hotel, man. Is that, how key? What if it had been the Holiday Inn? What would the name be then?
Yeah, you would.
Like the Motel 6. Like if Nixon's, like if those files, if Nixon's people had broke into the Motel 6.
Yeah, what if it was a Red Roof Inn?
Yeah, like what
Motel,
would it call things?
Motel 6 gate? Like, I don't know. It's a good question.
Roofing gate? Like that's, yeah.
I guess.
It was the Watergate Hotel.
You don't want your brand attached to a gate, right?
No.
Well,
the last thing you want.
I don't even like, I'm so sick of these two. Like, these two guys, think about the things that the top quarterback coach combinations worry about on a weekly basis. It's like high level calculus stuff, right? You guys remember, by the way, Mackie and Judd, Daily Minnesota Sports Entertainment or Therapy. Welcome into the show. We'll get to who gets it, who doesn't. We'll get to random season recall. But do you guys remember that Facebook Tom Brady documentary that came out?
Oh,
it was like a 6-part series.
Yeah.
And it basically followed him in hyperbaric chambers and all of his crazy training TB12 methods. Actually, you know what? I might be mixing up documentaries. There was an NFL Network one that was Bill Belichick focused and Tom Brady. I think that's the one I'm thinking of, where
that's
it showed those guys watching film together.
That's a great, yes. And Tom, I think Tom would stop in his office on Mondays, right? And like,
yeah,
they talk for a long time.
Yeah, they would just sit in there. They would kind of go over the previous week, but they would focus ahead. And there was a scene where they're looking at the Ravens defense, right? And, you know, Bill Belichick's just, oh, man, that Ed Reed, look, you know, he's just mumbling to himself. But they're like, they're talking like high-level football calculus about how to trick Ed Reed, because Reed is able to see inside their souls, right?
Yes.
Mike Zimmer and Kirk Cousins can't even figure out who's supposed to call timeout and when during a 2-minute drill.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder why the Vikings underachieve year after year, why they're under 500. There's several factors involved here, but if you're head coach and your quarterback in the most crucial moments of games, which is end of the half, right? First half, second half, chance for you to get an extra possession, extra points, whatever. And they can't figure out who's supposed to call timeout. Just end it. But
here's the incredible thing. So when you look at this entire situation between these two grown men, quarterback and a coach, okay? I love people who always say Mackie and Judd and Declan now too, Score North is guessing. They're just spitballing. They don't know what they're talking about. And they're guessing about things. And, you know, Purple Pride and Skull and these guys, you know, I'm going to go somewhere else and get my Vikings content. And the reality is, we've said for how long that it's clear these two need a divorce. Like, it doesn't work between them. Like,
When you've been a therapist in Minnesota sports for as long as we have, a certified therapist, you know what a strong couple looks like. And this is not a strong couple.
The smartest thing that my late father told me years ago, and he would just say this, was common sense. Use common sense. Like, common sense will lead you down the right path to figuring out what. And when you watched Kirk and Mike, pretty early on, common sense said, I don't think these two get along or are on the right page. And they certainly don't have the cohesiveness that, Phil, you talk about a lot, and it's very true, between quarterback, especially good to great QB, and head coach, right? So how long have we talked about this, that they need a divorce? Like, I'm tired of getting very sick of my bills as a sports therapist for trying to dissect something that for years now we've said just doesn't work. It doesn't work. And when you have these two going back and forth, and among the sports cliches/excuses, where does miscommunication rank. It's the greatest catch-all of all time.
But there's, but like, I'm okay with, like, miscommunications are going to happen. If it's a miscommunication about a coverage that we talked about during the week,
yes.
And God, I thought it was this, and I said this, or it was a miscommunication about the play. Like, all right, that's a bullets are flying football miscommunication. There should never be a miscommunication about who's in charge of a 2-minute drill. And you know who it should be? Kirk Cousins.
And there wasn't. Mike's lying. There was no. Kirk Cousins was in charge, and Kirk Cousins didn't. And because I watched that entire sequence live, and he was flustered as could be. He didn't know. The guy now, because I do think that this is true, the receiver lines up wrong, and Kirk goes from being like sort of in control to, oh my God, the house is on fire. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? There was no miscommunication there. Kirk didn't call the timeout and then blamed Mike, because again, it comes back to the marriage is rotten. It doesn't work. And quit staying together for the kids, because the kids are the fans, and the fans don't want you to stay together. They want you to get divorced. We'll go see on weekends, Mikey. Okay.
Coming from a divorced family, it's actually kind of great. You know, it's like
double
you get
Christmas,
the presents.
Yeah,
it's great.
Exactly.
Birthday presents.
Yeah, that's what
I've heard. Amazing. But so, let's keep drilling down here. And by the way, like, yeah, there is a million other things that led to the Vikings losing that game, and we're hyper focused on this one sequence at the end of the first half that may have been a 3-point swing, right? Like, they weren't going to drive for a touchdown, but they had 25 yards to go to get in field goal range. It's a close game. I'm using this more as a microcosm for why the relationship, the most important relationship, is broken, and it's sort of festering into these other areas of the team, right? And I've seen a lot of people comment and say, well, if Mike Zimmer is being a micromanaging boss, which I think there's a case to be made there in some respects, but generally he's not micromanaging the offense. I think he has edicts for what he wants his offense to look like, but I don't think he's getting into like the granular nature of the offense. So I don't know that I would call him a micromanager. We're going to get Alex Boone on Purple Daily today, and he might have a better classification for what Mike Zimmer is, because he's been in those rooms. But this notion that, well, Mike Zimmer is hoarding the timeouts and the responsibility, and he's not allowing Kirk Cousins to call timeouts. I don't believe that. I don't think that's true. Now, do I think, because he made a comment about Sheldon Richards, because Sheldon Richardson tried to call a timeout a few weeks ago, and they didn't have one left, and they got penalized, right? And so do I think he might have told his defense, guys, just stop. Like, let me handle this. But it's different when you're talking about a quarterback running a 2-minute drill. And I think where I get annoyed is if Mike Zimmer is at all not empowering his quarterback, who's 33 years old, been in the league for 10 years, to run the show in the 2-minute drill, then that's a Mike Zimmer thing. But equally concerning, if not more, is that your 33-year-old quarterback, who's the second or third highest paid player to the cap in the NFL, that he's pulling the, I just work here. I'm just doing what I'm told. He's either doing that to throw Mike Zimmer under the bus because everyone wants Mike Zimmer fired, or he's literally just, I just work here guy who makes, you know, $40 million to the cap, which is equally problematic on both
sides.
Here's
where I don't care. Both of them are a lost cause in this one. I don't care who's responsible. I really don't. At this point, I don't give a damn, because they both have the ability. Like, they're bleeping adults with control. They both, if they don't know, if they can't decide, but between them, if they're trying to parse out a timeout, it's over. The relationship is done. I'm done with it. I've been their therapist, and you know what? I'm firing them. I'm tired of the whole thing. I don't care.
You're fired.
I don't care who did
wrong.
You know, you two are fired. You two don't belong together. You move to Florida. You go to Arizona, and I want to be done with you. I'm just, this whole thing, like the fact that we are having to parse through a timeout at the end of the first half in what was a brutal loss filled with brutal decisions. And just, you know, I mean, hell, what? I saw a quote, Xavier Woods, I think post game, came out and talked about, we didn't prepare for Cooper Rush, because Mike had told Tafoya, we watched a bunch of film of Cooper Rush. Which said, we prepared for Prescott. We didn't prepare for this guy. Like,
which,
like,
I mean, honestly,
what's he talking? But I'm
they,
just,
they should have. But I'm fine with that.
I'm fine with that too. But like, Mike felt it necessary to try and sell that. Mike should have said, we prepared for Prescott, and there's barely any film of Rush. My point is these press conferences and finger pointing and who did what, and clearly people just flat out lying to save their own skin. It's tiresome. It's counterproductive. And most importantly, if I'm the Wilfs, I'm just saying the whole, come on, really? Yeah.
And in the end, I think everyone's record sort of speaks for itself. Like Kirk is like 8-19 in primetime games. Well, quarterbacks aren't you can't pin wins and losses on quarterbacks. Okay, well, Kirk's teams are like 8-19 in primetime. Kirk and Mike together the last 3+ seasons are something like 20 games below 500 against teams that finished the season with a winning record. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And so however the pie chart of blame works out to be, there's no win here, like literally and metaphorically, like there's no win here. It's not working. It's not even working on a sneak into the playoffs level, because if the playoffs started today, guess what? The Panthers would be the 7th seed. The Vikings are out. Mm-hmm. So I'm just sick of it all, man. Like we're in year 8 of Mike Zimmer, and we're in, I'm going to say, year 7 of Kirk Cousins as an NFL starter. And you know, you can only go so far down the, well, you just need another offensive lineman path. Like, this is bigger than just, like, needing a new center.
Yeah.
All right? It goes beyond that. Because there's a lot of other flawed rosters out there, and teams are still finding ways to win games with their quarterback and with their head coach. And the Vikings aren't.
The one good thing now is finally, for the first time in a long time, finally, everyone who follows this team from the outside is galvanized and can be one because of this. It doesn't matter who you like. So if you're a Kirk stan, it doesn't matter. If you're a Zimmer stan, it doesn't matter. Because this team now is to that tipping point where parceling out, well, you know, to do the pie chart again, right? Well, Kirk is 25% to blame, but Mike is 75%. It doesn't matter. The whole thing doesn't work. So we can all now stand as Vikings fans and followers, we can stand together, arms locked, and say, we don't care who's at fault, because everybody, for the most part, who is in charge of this thing has to go.
We can stand as one.
Exactly.
One Vikings nation. listening to the wild anthem.
The state of Skol. The state of Skol is galvanized. No more stands. If you're a Vikings fan, if you're a Vikings stan, you're done with the individual. Yeah.
You know, all right, I this isn't to defend Mike Zimmer, but I will empathize with Mike Zimmer in this way. He tried to tell you in early February of 2018, and I wish I would have thought of this before the show so we could have queued up the audio, but he said, I think at the NFL Combine during his press conference, we need to be careful spending too much money on a quarterback if it takes away from the rest of the roster. That was his way of, because he knew that those discussions were happening with Cousins. Mm-hmm. And by the way, this is not to say that, like, because Mike said this, that Cousins is the problem. Like, Mike has had plenty of issues as a coach the last few years. And I think if you would have put Kirk Cousins with a more offensive-minded, like, do I think Kirk was ever destined to be Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers? No. A lot of people make the Drew Brees comparison, like, well, look, Drew Brees was 500 for his first, you know, whatever, 60 games. And now, do I think if you were to put Kirk Cousins with Sean Payton or Andy Reid or Sean McVay or Kyle Shanahan, that there'd be a better version of him as a leader, as a 2-minute drill guy? Yes, I do think there's a better version of Kirk out there somewhere with a different coach that's not Mike Zimmer. But Mike, knowing that he's a defensive coach, he's got his way of wanting to build a football team. He told everyone almost 4 years ago, got to be careful with this. I'm not into this. I don't advocate for this. Right. He couldn't flat out say, I don't think we should sign Kirk Cousins for $30 million guaranteed on a multi-year deal. But that's as close as he could come to publicly saying, this is happening. I'm not on board with it. I just want to warn you all that this is going to take away. This might be a quarterback upgrade, but it's going to take away from the rest of the roster. And if you could take it a step further, he probably would have said, and I don't know that I'm going to get along with him because I don't think our personalities match. And the relationship was forced on Mike Zimmer, and it's been on him to make it work for the last 4 seasons. And if you now you go back to the, you know, the blame game in Mike's court, and he's done a crappy job of making it work. The relationship is zero. And so ultimately it's like, dude, these are the groceries that you have to cook with. You know, if I could steal a line from his favorite mentor, Bill Parcells, you got to fall in love with the groceries a little bit. You got to make them work. Mm-hmm. And he's never done that. So he never wanted Kirk to begin with. And it's very, very likely that that relationship and just the weird nature of it is going to lead to the Vikings either not getting into the playoffs again or sneaking in and getting beat, and then will eventually lead to Mike Zimmer's demise. So I do empathize a little in that his demise is going to be tied to someone he never wanted to begin with.
Do you know, though, that in all of the things that went wrong in that loss, and I mean, we've dissected a ton, it was so bad and so embarrassing that we haven't gotten to the fact that Mike Zimmer's pride and joy, his calling card, one of the reasons why he got hired in the first place, got absolutely dissected by Cooper Rush. Okay, Patrick Peterson's a good player. His loss is a big deal. I'm not trying to say it's not. But nonetheless, we talked about this guy, Phil, on the old show for a long time. Mike Zimmer was what? The cornerback whisperer, right? Like, this guy developed them. He took Rhodes and took him from being a really nice player to being a star for a period of time. Trey Waynes, I don't think, was as bad as people thought. He wasn't great, but he was certainly a serviceable corner who didn't embarrass himself. On Sunday night, Cooper Rush completely took apart both your corners and your nickel corner. And I would argue beyond Woods that Harrison Smith didn't have a great game. But your corners, the guys that we used to talk about, this is what Mike does. Like, you guys don't get what Mike does well. Dantzler, Breland, Alexander basically got done by Cooper Rush. And like, yes, we barely talked about it because the game was so embarrassing in other ways and so bad.
Yes. And now after that dissection, the Vikings defense total yards per play, so all plays, running, passing, yards per play allowed, they're 23rd, yards per pass attempt, they are 23rd, and yards per rush attempt, they are 28th. Wow. So if you just go on a per play basis, everything about this defense now after that Cowboys game, and it started to slip a little at the end of that Panthers game. Everything about it says bottom 10, bottom 12 defense to this point.
Which is the one thing that they basically, I think, assured the Wilfs, you know, we are going to, if we make these moves, we'll be back defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to get worse now, because I don't know how you get an effective pass rush with Hunter now gone for the season.
Now, they are 12th in scoring defense because they've been pretty good situationally. Like, I think they're pretty good on third downs. I have to look that up, but
they weren't until Sunday.
Yeah. No, yeah, it was bad on Sunday.
They got dissected on Sunday.
And they must be decent in the red zone of just, like, forcing field goals. But so, like, they're 12th in points allowed, but it's a lot of bending, and then sometimes they break.
I think they were first in the league going into Sunday's game in third down defense.
Yeah.
And then the Cowboys completely destroyed them.
Yep. I got that too here just for fun. So they're now fifth.
Well, this is great. This is great fun.
Defense. And then red zone percentage. So this is percentage of the time a team reaches the red zone and scores a touchdown. Oof. Okay. So they have the eighth highest red zone percentage. So that's not good. They're actually right in line with the Chiefs in terms of percentage of touchdowns allowed.
Yeah, good.
So
the the Ringer every week does winners and losers each week from the NFL. They always grade like three winners, three losers each week from, then they can be situations, plays, teams, etc. And they actually graded the Vikings in the losers category, but they looped in the refs too, or maybe both, because of the timeout gate, because of the back-to-back timeouts. And they also called Mike Zimmer, basically. Mike Zimmer is basically Brennan and Dale from Step Brothers, asking their parents for permission to build bunk beds to provide extra space for activities, then crying and yelling at their parents for giving them permission when it was obviously a terrible idea. Just picture Mike Zimmer screaming, "There's blood everywhere. It's bad. Why'd you allow us to do this?" Not good.
In reference to the what? The timeout?
In reference to the back-to-back timeouts, yeah.
Like, that whole thing is just, you want your coach to be, like, you want to think that your coach is studying game theory and how to best preserve timeouts and work the clock, because these are such crucial, important situations. And then you find out that, like, they don't even know who's supposed to call timeouts, and then Zimmer forgets that he called one later. It's like, oh, God.
Well, I've always said this. It takes a special person to be adept at calling plays for an offense or defense and also running the game. So, which is why I've never been like a huge fan of the head coaches calling plays. And I'm sure that there's a small group of men who have the bandwidth and ability to successfully do it. And we've seen that. But if I am going to hire you to coach my team, the first thing I want is that you're going to coach my team.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm sure Mike was so preoccupied with everything else, and I don't think he's a calm guy. And so at some point in time, something has to give. Unfortunately, with Mike, what we found is it's the clock, which is incredibly important. Like, you can't be like, well, I just sort of goofed up the clock today. Get them next time, boys.
I'm trying to find. So there was an article. There was an article on ESPN.com from like 2018. Because I guess my question is, how many NFL coaches call plays? And I think it's about half. There's, as of 2018, 14 NFL head coaches are the offensive play callers. So it was, and this is when McCarthy was still with the Packers, Bill O'Brien with the Texans. You know, there's actually been a lot of changes to this list. Adam Gase with the Dolphins. So it's definitely, when you account for defensive play callers, it's definitely about half or over half. But God, I don't know, man. Like, and Mike Zimmer's proving it, that he can't do both. He can't think about game situations. And then, by the way, whoever he has assigned to tell him what to do also doesn't know what they're doing. So it's that, like, whoever tapped him on the shoulder or got into his headphone and said, call a timeout. Like, that guy's job has clearly, like, whoever that is has been told, I need you to help me manage, like, the game flow and the timeouts and the strategy. And it's like, and that guy doesn't know what he's doing. So, like, the whole thing is just effed, and now they're going on the road against the Ravens and Lamar Jackson, and there's half a chance they could win that game because they're the Vikings, and they do weird things like that. And Mike Zimmer is going to be probably working 23 hours a day to put together a game plan, you know, although Danielle Hunter's out, so
I think Kirk
changes things.
I think Kirk comes back and has a big day because, like, this is a Kirk rebound noon start, correct?
Yeah, but it's a noon at start, Baltimore, dude.
Yeah, it's at Baltimore, but it's a noon start. He's not at home, so he can't be booed here. The pressure is like, well, they're not going to win. And so I think Kirk comes back, and offensively, I think they might score points. They might. But yeah, I think with Hunter out, my question comes back to this. Where does the pass rush come from? Because Griffin's going to get doubled more now, and he's an old guy. Like, he's going to wear down. DJ Wonnum, Kenny Willekes, Patrick Jones II, who has not played yet. Like, where does that – because Hunter, just by being on the field, changes games.
Sure.
Who exactly is going to be the complement to Griffin? And I don't think Griffin alone can come close to doing what he does when Hunter's on his left side, on that left end.
Well, we've got plenty more looking ahead. And also, I don't think we're done, like, looking back yet, because Alex Boone is going to join Purple Daily today. So check that out. And thank you guys for helping us set a record on Vikings Vent Line. It was the most consumed Vikings Vent Line in a 48-hour period in the history of the show. And if you haven't watched it or listened to it, Purple Daily Podcast, ScoreNorth.com, Central Hub for everything we do. But also here on Mackie and Judd on Tuesdays, we dive into a little segment called Who Gets It and Who Doesn't. Let's start with this.
Was there more you could have done, you think, to put him away?
Well, in the first half, it was fouling. I mean, they had 20 free throws. They went to the line 25 times. We kept fouling. You know, most of them were fouls. And that's something that we've made a point of emphasis to kind of correct our fouling. We were a big foul team last year. Tonight we fouled a lot, and that's kind of really what kept them in the game early, you know. And this is kind of a pretty typical script when this happens, and then they start making shots and you don't.
All right, so that was brutal last night at Target Center. Judd had a front row seat, media row, watching that game. But every Tuesday, who gets it and who doesn't? Presented by Federated Mutual Insurance Company. Federated's here. If you're looking for risk management, maybe you foul too much. Oh, maybe you give up 43 points fourth quarters.
Fouling.
And you're looking to mitigate risk. Federated has been helping business owners for over 100 years. Yeah, how many times did he say foul?
And he says it with this just disgust.
Fouling. We're going to foul.
Foul. We're a foul team.
You smell foul. Federated Insurance, federatedinsurance.com. And remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours. I'm going to start us out here with a who doesn't get it, gentlemen. Malik Beasley.
Mm-hmm.
New rule on this show and new rule for the Timberwolves. Malik Beasley should never shoot the ball as many times in a game as Karl Anthony Towns unless Towns gets hurt or unless Towns fouls out in the second quarter or something. Last night, and Judd, you were right there, so you can give us your observations, but Malik Beasley hasn't been able to knock down shots yet this season. Like, he's one of the best shooters in the NBA. It has not clicked for him yet. And last night he decided, I'm going to shoot my way out of this slump. Mm-hmm. Come hell or high water, mm-hmm. I'm shooting my way out of this slump. And so he took 12 three-pointers. He only made three of them, and I think a couple of them came late when the game was already out of hand. He shot 4 of 16 from the field. Towns was 8 of 17 because he's one of the most efficient players in the NBA. The problem with Beasley is, outside of a couple rebounds here and there, he doesn't really offer that much value outside of three. So, like, if you're going to shoot 12 threes and make barely any of them and add nothing else, that's how you wind up blowing a double-digit lead to the Magic. Like, he almost single-handedly shipwrecked the Timberwolves last night by just deciding, this is the game. I'm going to bust out of my slump. All right, no, dude, you're a role player. So just let's take a step. You take a few to see if you're hot, and then if you're not, then you just sort of fade back into the flow of things and wait for the ball to come to you wide open.
I've said this since opening night. I don't know with where this team wants to go that he's a fit here. Like, he's coming off the bench. He seems, because he's not starting, he seems intent on imposing his will, to use a football term, like, I'm in now, feed Malik the ball.
Got to get mine, dude. It's Heat a check city.
Yeah, exactly right. So I don't know that if I am the Wolves, that I really think that this guy has a long-term future here. And if you can find a team that says, we'd love to have Malik Beasley, he's going to be our shooter and he's going to start, I think I might make a trade. I mean, just saying.
Well, don't you guys think that he's probably been in every iteration of a Ben Simmons trade?
Yeah.
Like, for cap reasons, you know, first and foremost, yeah. But like, all of the conversations they've been having, like, he's probably been like the central figure. Like, I guess he is up to 32% from 3-point range, but he's averaging per 36 minutes, he's averaging 10 threes a game. And again, he's one of the best shooters in the NBA, but he doesn't do much else. You know, he's not going to play lockdown defense.
And he might need to start for somebody.
Yeah, for a bad team. He's a 20 points per game guy on a 60 loss team.
There you go.
But this team aspires to be more than that.
Bingo.
Like the Wolves, I feel like the Wolves had guys like this throughout some of their bad runs, like Kevin Martin, 20 points a game on a 25 win team.
The great Kevin Martin. I love the Kevin Martin shot.
Yeah. So, all right. So Malik Beasley doesn't get it. Dude, pump the brakes. Just pump the brakes a little bit.
Rex, go ahead.
All right. I'll do a who doesn't get it, but it's positive. It's a positive who doesn't get it, and it's from the Wolves game. I'm going to say Wolves and Minnesota sports fans who think this is the same old Wolves. And I get it. Yeah. You lose to the Magic. That's a bad loss. You lost to a Pelicans on the back-to-back. Also a poor loss. But guess what? This team is 3-3. They're not 1-6. They're not 0-6. This team is still gelling, and I know the D'Lo injury, we're still waiting to hear the severity of that, but Cat is healthy, Anthony Edwards is healthy, and Anthony Edwards is carrying this team to a new level. I mean, this dude is such a self-aware guy that he comes after the F that Pelicans lost, and we have to share the ball, and he's 20 years old. And then he comes out yesterday saying a similar comment as well. There's no need to bail on a team right now that's still mostly healthy and still gelling together. This is not the same old Wolves. If it was the same old Wolves, they'd be 0-6, and you'd be getting your butts kicked throughout the first six games. It hasn't been the case. This is not the same old Wolves. I'll take some of the Macadac Kool-Aid. I'm also drinking it in. This is not the same old Wolves. We're going to be okay.
Yeah, dude, I agree with you. I think it's really easy sometimes with the Wolves to just fall back into, and well, Royce did it on our Royce episode of Mackie and Joe, where you just fall into the, well, that's a bad loss, and so therefore it's the same old Wolves. This is going to happen. So this team wasn't going to go from, you know, wherever they were at last year to just being like a 50-win team overnight. There's going to be games where Anthony Edwards puts up some clunkers and their roster is not really complete right now. So I'm not trying to exonerate that. That was a terrible loss last night. They should not have lost that game. But there's going to be like 10 of those.
Yeah.
But there's also going to be games where they roll into Milwaukee and they beat Giannis. And it's exciting. So I said this with you guys and Royce earlier today. The range of outcomes in any given night for this team is so wide. Like, they could give up 43 points in the fourth quarter to a young and bad Magic team and lose. Or I could see them doing what they did to the Jazz twice last year, which is just beating one of the best teams in the NBA. So we're just going to kind of have to get used to the variance and the swings of this team and hold on for dear life.
I would like to see, though, when they aren't playing great offensively, I would like to see the defense more consistently than engaged, which in the fourth quarter last night was
good luck with Beasley on that.
No, he had, so there was one dunk that I forget a Magic player had. He basically flew by Malik, and after the dunk, Malik stands there and just like goes like this. He holds his head like, oh my god, what happened? It's like, you didn't try.
Yeah.
Malik, you didn't try. That's what happened. I can tell you very simply. You might want to put your body in front of the guy and try it and take a charge. So anyway.
Yeah. Do you have another Wolves one, Judd?
Yes, and I've got a doesn't get it.
Okay.
From the Timberwolves. Chris Finch, you don't get it.
What are you doing?
Finchy, who, by the way, should star in the sitcom as a B-legged father of like a family, because he always looks like he just got home from work and it's been a hellish day. His hair is disheveled. He's like slouched, his pants.
He looks like he smokes two packs a day, but yes, probably doesn't, right?
He should be in like a CBS sitcom about the basketball dad, and now he's home and he's grouchy around the house. He's like, don't you foul anymore, son. Here's why Finchie doesn't get it, though. Carl Anthony Towns, to Phil's point from before last night, had 16 shots. He was 8 of 16, 23 points, 4 of 8 from three-point range, which is great. Malik Beasley, though, as Phil said, also 16 shots. Let's flash back to Saturday's game against the Nuggets. Carl Anthony Towns, and by the way, I'm all for sharing the basketball, but I'm not for sharing it to the point of Towns does not get shots. Saturday in the loss to the Nuggets, 11 shots. Going into last night, with the Nuggets game included in the past two games, he had 24 shots total in two games after having 15, 20, and 24 shots in the first three. My point being is, Finchy, I love you. I think you're going to be a good coach. You're definitely a basketball diehard. All of that being said, Cat has to get his shots.
Per 36 minutes, Carl Anthony Towns is third on the team in shot attempts behind both Anthony Edwards and D'Angelo Russell. Now, if you just go per game, he's second. Anthony Edwards averaging 22 shots per game, Towns just under 17, and D'Lo at 15. So, you know, the only thing I will say is Edwards, it's going to be easier for Edwards to create his own offense than it is. Like, Towns can create a lot of offense, too.
That's what I was going to say. Carl.
But Edwards can kind of get anywhere he wants on the court. So I think Edwards is going to wind up taking more shots.
Okay.
But I'm with you. Towns is still not shooting the ball enough, or they're not running enough plays for him. He's also been passing the ball out of double teams, which is what he should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Go ahead.
He's got that three-point shot at times and doesn't take it, and he should almost always take it.
Yeah. I got one more Wolves win here for you guys.
Okay.
Another who doesn't get it, all right? And it's anyone who still says that Anthony Edwards is Andrew Wiggins 2.0.
Oh, I hope no one says that.
I think we can squash that now, right? I'll give you one stat that will actually just squash it just out of hand. So Andrew Wiggins in his entire career has only averaged 5 rebounds. Now, Andrew Wiggins is one of the more like bouncy athletic players in the league, right? Like he's lanky. It's not like he's 6'1", Chris Paul. Like if Andrew Wiggins wants to grab 12 rebounds in a game, he can, but he chooses not to. The only time he's ever averaged 5 rebounds in a game was 2 years ago, the year that he got traded from the Wolves to Golden State. Already this season, and again, it's small, it's only 6 games, but Ant Edwards is averaging 8 rebounds a game. And why does that matter? He's active. Not only is he shooting the ball, and by the way, like he's above 40%. The three-pointers aren't really falling, so he's pretty inefficient offensively, but it's not a total train wreck. But what does he do off the ball? What does he do? Is he setting his teammates up? Is he grabbing rebounds? Is he generating fast breaks the other way? And there's a lot of really good signs. He's 20 years old, and he's averaging 8 rebounds because he's active and he wants to engage and be a part of things when he's not shooting. Wiggins, when he's not shooting, is in his happy place, standing in the corner and just waiting for the ball to come to him, right? Edwards' emotion and passion, he wants to be in the spotlight in a good way. So anyone who is still making that comparison has probably not watched enough Ant Edwards in the last year and a half or so.
I'll get another who gets it, but I'll go to the state of hockey. And yesterday on Weekend Statements, I tried to will Kirill Kaprizov into existence with him breaking out of his slump. And I will say who gets it, and that's Kevin Fiala. Same type of premise here. I mean, Kevin Fiala has been snake-bitten a little bit. His advanced numbers and everything says that he should be performing a lot better. He's averaging 3 shots per game. Corsi 4 is strong. You would think that he should be able to have more goals than just one on the season since scoring on opening night, but through 8 games, he only has 1 goal. But yesterday, when asked about the drought, and this is, again, a self-aware dude, just like Anthony Edwards is, Kevin Fiala says, I feel like I'm a goal scorer, and if I don't score goals in some games, it's getting it a little bit in my head. But I feel like I've been long enough in the league to know that it can't. Just to stay with it, stick with it, and be a good teammate, be happy, and do a lot of other things. You know, right now I'm on the penalty kill as well. It's not always scoring goals. I have to do other good things. And Fiala's goal on Monday after practice was shoot some more pucks, score some more goals. I mean, I think Kevin Fiala, too, like Kirill Kaprizov, has been snake-bitten, but I also think he recognizes that if he continues this rate, the goals are going to come in bunches, and Fiala, in general, is more of a streakier player than Kirill Kaprizov. I mean, there was stretches over the last 2 years where Kevin Fiala was basically scoring almost a goal a night. He had the same thing happen last season towards the end of the regular season. I think Kevin Fiala and Kirill Kaprizov are definitely fighting it right now. I don't think they have to change their games necessarily, because everything else says they should be scoring more goals. And hopefully, though, they need to start doing it, because they're two players. They're the Wild's two star players, and they can't afford them to not be goal scorers. So I think Kirill Kaprizov snaps out of it here, and also Kevin Fiala gets it. He recognizes he's a goal scorer, and he's going to break out of this funk.
All right. Yeah, what is your level of, after a couple of sort of blowout losses, what is your guys' level of Wild panic right now? Like 1 to 10. 10 being like, and 1 being, hey, everything's fine. I think it's
4. I'm at a 4, I think. Maybe even lower.
Well, wait. Yeah, 4 is pretty high. I'm at a 2 right now.
Oh, wow. Zen Zolgad.
It's very low, but it's not the lowest in the state, because the lowest in the state belongs to our friends at Bally Sports North. We're coming up next. Kirill Kaprizov tells the Wild to buzz off, but we're going to show you how he edges around the ice. And then later, Jonas Brodin on Becoming Wild. He's just a happy guy to be in Minnesota.
When are we going to launch the Score North exclusive documentary, docu-series, I should say, Becoming Zolgad?
You know what? Just bring your camera.
Coming up next, Becoming Zolgad. Yep. Oh, he's on his seventh episode of Law & Order on this Saturday.
Driving to the station. Yeah, I put in 110%.
How many days has he been wearing now those Chill Boys long underwear?
Yeah. And my surly hoodie.
Worn that surly hoodie 9 straight days. Has he brought it to the washing machine yet? Find out next on Becoming Zolgad.
And then we break down the origination of the hoodie. Where did it come from? We show you how it was made while glossing over the fact that Judd was just arrested and incarcerated for the rest of his life. We're not going to talk about that. We're not going to talk about any of the warts at all. There's nothing to see here, damn it. Nothing to see. Coming up next, we break down the life of Charlie Manson. He did some good work, actually. You don't know about it, but he played guitar and wrote some songs.
Plays a little bit.
And then later, serial killers, we find the positive in all they've done. While those other channels are talking about what they did wrong by killing people, we tell you what they did right. That's straight ahead on Valley Sports North.
Oh God!
It's sad. I honestly, in fact, you know what? I'll transition this. Who doesn't get it? Bally Sports North, Wild, and I shouldn't say this because I like Wes Walls, and Wes Walls is positive, but at least he tells you things, and he tells you things. Watching Saturday's game, though, in game, it occurred to me I am going to have to find a way to sync up the radio call with my TV. I can no longer take it.
Can't do it.
I can't do it anymore. I can't do it.
And Andrew Cunanan once donated $5 to charity.
Exactly right.
We'll tell you how and what charity next.
Cunanan's fashion designing underrated. And later. Oh my God.
Oh.
I can't. I seriously, on Saturday during the game, I reached my breaking point. I'm going to find a way to sync up the radio call. I don't care if they are on. Yeah. I don't care what station, okay? I can't do it anymore. I realized that as I was listening to it. It's been a long road. I mean, we're and the thing about it is, so all I want is this, because I know you're not going to torch the team. I don't expect that. That's not fair. But all I want is, can you do an ISO on Kaprizov? Like, and just say, hey, here's what looks wrong and here's what looks right. So like,
here's how to fix it.
I am a viewer. I am watching, quote, experts, right? People that played the game, and in game, I still have no idea what anyone's doing wrong.
Yeah, I think a look ahead, maybe they do some of this more than I'm giving credit for, but like, it doesn't have to be pounding on the guy. It's just we're looking for solutions here.
And pre and post, they do some stuff. Now, I'm not saying it's great, but they do some stuff. But I'm just saying in game, like, let's talk about Kaprizov and let's talk about not like, he's going to break out of it. I can feel it coming. Okay, I can say that.
Yeah.
Anyway, coming up next. Coming up next. It's Becoming Macadac.
Becoming Macadac. Oh, look at there. He's back on the Peloton, about to pass out after 15 minutes.
After devouring a dozen more buffalo wings. Macadac.
Yeah. Macadac, a man who once blacked out after a workout, is back on the Peloton.
All right, who gets it? Who does? Any other quick ones before we get to random season recall here?
I couldn't hold back. I'm done.
All right, Declan, what do you got for us this week on random season recall here? Where Declan puts us to the test, picks random Minnesota sports seasons from the past.
All right, let's do it. The 2000 Twins. We're going to go with the 2000 Minnesota Twins.
You do have a certain way of doing this, don't you?
I do. I have a whole.
Because you told us last week, you're like, I've got a certain.
I have a whole
way I do this.
My organized spreadsheet that I look at every day. It just says to do list. It just says to do list, and it's 9 pages of unorganized, organized, mediated to get disasters.
Good for you.
And I have all the seasons we've done, so I don't obviously repeat the season. And I try to rotate each 4. But yes, we are down to the 2000. Minnesota Twins, boy.
So this is before they became good. This is kind of like toward the end of their horrible run. They were still really bad, but there were some young players probably being sprinkled in here.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
So I'll put you within 3 on either side, but how many wins did the 2000 Twins finish with?
all right, all of these teams lost 90 games, but none of them lost 100. So we should be able to get pretty close here. Like, every from like 1995, basically, or whatever, forward. So I'm trying to think of how bad they were. I don't think they were like 99 lost. They might have been like 97 or 98 lost bad.
So 95-ish. So if we put it in the middle, then be... So high 60s, Phil?
I kind of want to nail this, but... So are we looking for the wins or the losses?
The wins. The wins.
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 Okay.
W's.
So like 60, like 65 and 97... 66 and 96. So you're saying like 67 and 95?
Yeah, I'm saying
I think 67 is probably.
I'm saying fair. High 60s. Yeah, getting towards.
Let's go 67.
67.
Within three.
Yes! 69 wins.
There we go, baby.
69, nice wins.
Dex
93.
Yep, yep, there you go, Dex.
69, a very nice season for the Minnesota Twins, if you want
to
say it like that. But yeah, 69, 93 for those 2000 Minnesota Twins.
Okay. All right. Good. Good start.
On the board. On the board.
Good start, Phil. Yeah.
So four players hit double-digit home runs for that Twins team. Who were they?
Okay.
So,
all right. This is just between friends here, but this would have been around the time Jock Jones would have been on this team.
Was Koski on this team?
Koski for sure would have been on this team. Torrey Hunter was. He had 1 year where he hit like 9 home runs because he was up and down.
Yeah,
I think
what
this was
year?
Before Torrey hit. I think this is before double-digit Torrey.
Torrey Hunter got sent down in like May or June of one of these years. So I think you're right. Was Coombdog still around at this point?
Coombdog would have been gone by now.
Okay,
I think Coombdog was pretty sure Coombdog was with the Cubbies or the Dodgers.
Because Coombdog was their all-star in '99.
Coming
correct,
up
in
next,
Boston.
Ron Coomer teaches you how to steal third base. That was my favorite Fox Sports North instructional of all time.
Oh,
that was my favorite one of all time.
Just barreling in. Didn't they have one where Glenn Perkins was trying to like help you learn how to turn double plays or something?
The 2013 Twins, like, man.
That's
yeah, that was not a fun post-game seminar.
Okay, here's another name. Matt Lawton was a staple on these teams.
And he got traded for Rick Reed in 2001 or 2, right?
Because
that team was contending. So it's Lawton. So wait, it's
Lawton. Let's go. Yeah, so well, Jones. Between you and me. Jock Jones, Corey Koski, Matt Lawton. There might have been a Minkiewicz, Pierzynski situation here. David Ortiz was hitting bombs on these teams.
All right, hold on a sec. So, yeah, that's true. Ortiz was on that team. Pierzynski, I think. So the first wave of those kids was Pierzynski, because he was in the first wave. Koski, yep.
Minkiewicz, Jock Jones... Torrey.
Okay. I think Lawton I love.
Let's guess Lawton. Let's get one on the board.
Matt Lawton, an official guess?
Yeah, Matt Lawton, official.
Yes! 13 bombs for Matt Lawton. Yep. What a nice year.
I think...
Dude, I saw a picture of Matt Lawton on Instagram a couple weeks ago.
Good.
Let's just say Matt Lawton has been enjoying the fruits of being a retired baseball player.
Good for him.
You know what? Olivia.com, Matt, will be the place to go. Little free plug there. I think
Koski. Yeah.
Corey Koski, official guess.
Yeah.
Yep.
9 home runs for Corey Koski. 9.
Really?
9. 300 year. He had a great year. / 300, 400, 441. Okay. Really nice year, but only 9 bombs.
That was kind of these Twins teams, this is like heart of the steroid era, and these Twins teams could not hit home runs. It was really sad. Mm. Okay, Jock Jones.
Jock Jones.
Jock Jones was like batting leadoff and stuff.
Jacques Jones.
Jock Jones.
Yes, 19 bombs. Right. Team leading 19 bombs for Jock Jones that year.
I do like Ortiz, Phil.
Let's go David Ortiz.
Big Papi, David Ortiz.
12 homers or something.
Yep.
Yes, sir. Nice. That's 3 of the 4.
Nice. Okay, so we need one more.
How many home runs did he have?
David Ortiz had exactly 10. Okay. He had a really nice year, too.
All right, so we're sitting good here. So I'm just trying to think through this team, and I'm sure we'll get to other
shortstop,
guys on the roster.
Shortstop, no, right?
This is pre-Guzman, pretty sure, because 01 was the year that Guzman had like 20 triples.
Right.
Right? This is pre-Rivas. This might have been, is that Stella?
Yeah, Stella, stop that. Oh, she's right here. Hold on a second here. Help us guess.
Who's a good girl?
Oh, Stella.
She loves. Paul, Daddy will give you a kiss, and now you say hi. You say hi to the guy. Look at the camera. You're my daughter. Look at the camera. This is embarrassing.
You're my daughter. You're my daughter.
Be a camera hog.
That's right. I'm just trying to think of the diamond here. So we got. So we know Koski's at third. We got Jock Jones, Matt Lawton, and this is kind of the time where Torrey Hunter was up and down.
Yeah, I don't
think
it's
themselves
Torrey.
The Soul Patrol outfield, or that might have been Shannon Stewart too. AJ was
choked up.
Kind of catching. I just have some acid reflux this morning.
Oh, okay. Thanks for that. Thanks for the
some
update.
Apple cider vinegar.
Old Mackadak has some acid reflux.
Dougie Minkiewicz, like there's probably a bunch of guys that hit like 8, 9, 11 home runs. So
yep.
You mentioned a name.
How many? So there's four. We've got three of them, right? Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we've got two wrong guesses left. Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's go. So, you know what? Let's go. Let's go. AJ.
Yep.
Brzezinski?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Let's officially guess AJ Brzezinski.
Yep.
AJ had a nice year, hit .307, but only had 88 at bats and only had two bombs.
All right.
I think it was a September call up or something.
Okay, so other guys we've mentioned here are Doug Minkiewicz.
Mm-hmm.
We did mention Guzman. I don't think it's him.
No.
I'm trying to think of other guys we mentioned. Torrey Hunter. Who it's played? Possible,
so who played center on that team then? Because Jock Jones would have played.
Well, Torrey Hunter.
Right,
played,
but he
largely
was,
played center field for this team.
Right,
but he got sent down. I'm pretty sure.
Right, and he was hitting like a .98 when he got sent down. So I don't know if he rebounded for double digit home runs.
I'm pretty sure he hit like 9 or 10.
Okay.
with a rebounding average, and then the next year in 2001 he hit like 25 or 27 or something.
Okay.
So it's either Minkiewicz or Torrey Hunter.
What was there a veteran on this team?
Dex said we already mentioned him.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
God, I don't think Minkiewicz hit.
Take your pick, Phil. So I can blame you. You know, because you know Phil had the option to make the guess, and he just guessed it wrong. Let's be very clear. The timeout was there to be.
Then I'm gonna take charge here. Okay, I'm gonna do what Kirk Cousins refused to do
until you're wrong.
And I'm gonna do two things. I'm gonna tell you that I think Torrey Hunter hit 9 home runs. This is like I'm calling a poker bluff here.
Okay,
I think Torrey hit 9, and I'm gonna say Doug Minkiewicz.
All right.
Ah!
Don't tell us it's Torrey Hunter.
Dougie Baseball had 14 at bats that year. Also collected 6 hits, but only 14 ABs.
Wow, 6 for 14. That's a hell of a season.
Our boy Ron Coomdog was still there. He had 16 bombs.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
You know what? This was impromptu press conference right now. Yeah.
Sorry.
I had the right guess, and Phil stopped it. He boycotted it. But, I mean, just
I don't have the option to
that.
Change the guess at the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm.
So. Go talk to Phil about that, okay?
Okay,
so how many home runs did Torrey have?
Torrey Hunter had 5 home runs that year.
Okay, it was single digits. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. And then the next year he had like 20-something. So, all right.
Keep going here.
Hodgepodge.
The Twins led the American League in this offensive statistic.
Okay.
And it was a positive statistic, too, by the way. It's not like strikeouts or something bad. Like, they led the league in this offensive statistic.
If Christian Guzman was up by then, it's triples. Because he had that one year where he had a ton of triples, but I don't know if he was...
I think it was 0-1.
It might have been. He came over in the Milton trade, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's 2 years. Well, so that's 2 years after the Milton trade. Or mm-hmm. No.
99 was the Milton
99. Trade. So, yeah, you're probably right. So it's probably not that. But
it could still have been triples. I mean, Jock Jones, Matt Lawton, Torrey Hunter, those guys are probably hitting triples. What other things? It wasn't home runs.
Nope.
Would it have been batting average? But they would if they had a if they led the league in batting average, they would have won more than 69 games.
Yeah, I don't think it's batting average.
So it could have been singles. They probably led the league in singles. But I don't know that Declan would like have that stat isolated out.
That's pretty obscure stat, but I also think like a normal stat is probably too easy, so it's going to be something weird.
It wasn't walks because this would have been when like the Oakland the Twins were
doubles?
Not like in
doubles.
Could have been doubles, but
like they didn't hit home runs, so they had to go somewhere.
You know what? That's probably a good guess. Like they didn't hit any home runs, so they were probably trading home runs for doubles a little bit more.
And the dome was actually, in retrospect, notorious way
it
more
was.
For doubles than home runs.
All right, let's go doubles.
They were third in the league in doubles.
Oh, wow.
So they were a good doubles team.
Yeah.
Okay, triples. It's got to be triples.
Triples? Final guess.
Yeah! Triples. There you go.
Christian Guzman with 20 triples
see,
that
he was
year.
On that damn damage.
Oh, God.
Oh, I almost swore.
Torrey had seven.
Swore.
Jack Jones had five.
I knew he had 20, but God dang it.
He was incredible. I just couldn't recall if that was 2000 or 2001.
13 players had a triple that season for that Twins team.
Yeah, well, and Guzzi alone.
Yeah, I mean, Guzman had 20 of them. So
that basically...
Okay, now I'm thrown off. I'm like, I thought that was 2001.
So
now I don't even know.
So this team now then is Koski at third,
Guzzi at short.
At short
was Rivas? Rivas must have been the second baseman then.
Or was
Jay Cannizzaro still there?
No. When
Jay
did
Cannizzaro
they get?
Was there.
Okay. when did they get Castillo?
Oh, that
was
like
Castillo.
04,
that was like 05, 06. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I look, dudes. I'm old. Okay.
Did he won a World Series with the Marlins in 2003?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the Twins got it.
Okay. So who was this? So Coomer must have played quite a bit of first base then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then David Ortiz would have been the primary DH.
Yep.
And then their outfield was mostly Jock, Lawton, Torrey,
mm-hmm.
and then whoever was a fourth outfielder.
Who caught for this team? Besides
God, it was bad.
Can this be a question?
Sure,
because I got a couple guesses for you.
Sure.
Okay.
So give us how many catchers are we trying to guess here?
We'll go with three
so
guys.
AJ?
Yeah, three guys appeared in at least 30 plus games at catcher.
Okay.
Okay.
Marcus Jensen.
Excuse me. Four of them did.
Wow.
Marcus Jensen.
Yes.
Marcus Jensen. That's a pull.
I got this. Hold on. There's a guy. Oh, God. What was the guy's name? He's from the La Crosse, Wisconsin area, and he played for the Diamondbacks in a World Series.
Hmm.
Oh, Schaefer? Was that Schaefer? There was a Danny Schaefer, and then there was another.
Oh, man. God dang it. I can see his face.
Wow.
Damian Miller. Damian Miller. Wasn't Damian Miller like Randy Johnson's catcher? He played for the Twins. I'm trying to remember what year. There was also a... who was the other guy? Oh, my God. I can like envision these slap-hitting, just
Slappies.
Awful catchers that batted like .195.
When was Blanco here?
Oh.
That was later.
That was later.
Henry Blanco was like 04.
That's my wheelhouse.
It was Joe Mauer.
Okay.
It was Joe Mauer's backup.
Loved Henry Blanco.
Wasn't there? There was a Danny Ardois, but I can't remember if he was a catcher or a pitcher.
Wow,
Danny Ardois. All right, I'm gonna guess Danny Ardois. Oh, snap!
Wow! Oh, look at this! Oh
yes.
My God! Oh my God!
Okay. One
so you
more.
Got, so you got three.
This is post Matt Walbeck.
Oh, yeah, you said Pierzynski. Like Pierzynski, I just gave that to you, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep,
yeah. Okay.
Yep,
yeah. You're missing one then. Yep.
Oh my God. Ardois, Marcus Jensen, Damian Miller. God, that was a heat check.
When
right
was? When, thanks.
Matt Walbeck.
Beasley. No. He was earlier, right?
He was like when? 97.
When was Tom Prince here?
So many catchers.
Tom Prince. That's
Tom
a good
Prince.
One.
Tom Prince came along around
that's a good
this
one.
Time, I thought.
Tom Prince.
I don't know.
Hold
so
on.
Like, there was... You want to keep going?
No, I got... There's another guy, and I think this guy also...
I'm surprised you haven't said him.
Okay, that's interesting.
Hmm.
Surprised we haven't said him. Okay.
Veteran guy, Dex?
It's not Steinbach. He would have been gone. Oh! Matthew LeCroy.
There he is.
Oh.
Matthew LeCroy.
How much did he catch for that team?
More than he probably should.
Yeah, and he was terrible. Appeared in 24.
Frank,
167
Frank
at bats.
Because he couldn't throw guys out.
.174. Yeah. He was not good. Just
Hall of Famer.
Couple. Yep. We'll just do one more here, actually. Two players had double-digit saves for the Twins that year. Two relievers racked up double-digit saves. Who were they?
Okay, so just between friends here, this is definitely like LaTroy Hawkins. LaTroy Hawkins would have done enough to get the closer role in 01. So he probably in the mix. Eddie Gordado was a main setup guy. They also had like, I think they had like Greg Swindell on this team. Let's go. LaTroy Hawkins.
When did Eggie come back to start and then got moved back to the bullpen? Because he came back from the Cubs. They traded him to the Cubs, and then he was with the Red Sox eventually, but he came back here and he was going to start.
Yeah.
And then I feel like he ended up back in the bullpen.
I thought that was like 98.
But that might have been, yeah.
We also had him on one of these recently.
Okay, so yeah, I think LaTroy and
let's guess LaTroy
are probably good guesses.
LaTroy is one of them.
Okay, and then Gordado. I'm just trying to think of the other options here. Greg Swindell, kind of. I'm pretty sure he was on that team. Eddie Gordado. Was Mike Tremblay still on?
LaTroy had 14. This other guy had... I will say Gordado had some saves. He didn't get to 10, though.
Okay.
Okay. So, who else would have been...
So, we might be talking about a veteran reliever like a Swindell by that time.
Let's go Greg Swindell. Mike Tremblay keeps coming in my head. Like, why would he...
Okay.
Mike Tremblay. We're down to our last guess.
This player spent some time in Seattle, and he also led the American League in relief appearances the season before with the Twins.
Okay, so Mike Jackson was a reliever the Twins had around this time who also pitched in Seattle.
Yep, and he did pitch a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Mike Jackson.
Oh, no.
God dang it.
Bob Wells.
Bob Wells.
Oh, yeah. Bob Wells. Bob, yeah. a great beer connoisseur.
He looks like he enjoyed some beers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He was... Bob Wells. There was a bar around the Metrodome. I know it's going to shock you that Bob Wells was a regular at...
Hubert's?
At the corner of the bar. I don't think it was Hubert's. I think it was farther away than that, but it was close. But
I just pulled
Bob
up his
Wells.
Picture. Oh, my God.
He looks like he enjoys some beers, dude.
Bob Wells is great.
Bob Wells. That's right. You're going to slam
you know
nine
what Bob
beers and then...
Bob Wells didn't believe in no bleeping analytics. No. He had no time for analytics.
Screw analytics.
Give me my beer.
Bob Wells. All right. That is... All right. I feel like that was kind of a... Probably
Declan
probably won that one.
That was hit and miss.
It was very, very much a 50-50 stalemate there. But that is random season recall on Mackie and Judd. Don't forget, Alex Boone on Purple Daily probably has some strong opinions. Oh. And also on Purple Daily, we officially debut Declan Wants Someone's Ass Fired. Who is
what
it going to be?
What a week to debut it.
I know. Everybody. All right. Write that down and an accountability session tomorrow. See you guys. Mackie and Judd.